This episode is entirely AI-generated, including the voice you're hearing right now. Today's show is sponsored by StudyFlow Pro, a fictional task management app designed specifically for online students. Remember that some information in this episode may be hallucinated, so please verify anything important before acting on it. We're diving into university policies and academic integrity today, focusing on the practical frameworks you need to navigate higher education successfully. This isn't abstract theory. These are the operating rules that will determine whether your academic work stands up to scrutiny. We'll start by examining how university policies actually function as a system, looking particularly at the Code of Academic Integrity and grade appeals process. These aren't isolated rules, they're interconnected frameworks that shape every assignment you submit. Then we'll get into the mechanics of academic integrity itself, the five categories of violations, why intent doesn't matter for plagiarism, and how the disciplinary process actually escalates. This section covers what happens when policies are violated and why prevention matters more than appeals. After that, we'll cover the practical tools available to you, rubrics as strategic evaluation guides, advisement resources, and metacognitive thinking approaches that help you assess your own learning and compliance. Finally, we'll address artificial intelligence and modern academic challenges, AI hallucination risks, bias concerns, and how existing plagiarism policies apply to these new tools. Each section builds on the previous one, so we're not just covering rules in isolation. We're building a complete framework for understanding how these policies protect both individual students and the broader academic community. Let's start with the basic architecture of university policies and why they exist in the first place. Let's start with something fundamental that most students miss. University policies aren't random bureaucratic requirements. They're actually a coherent framework designed around a single principle that the University of the People states clearly. The Code of Academic Integrity opens with this: the university fosters a spirit of honesty and integrity fundamental to a university community whose fundamental purpose is learning and the pursuit of knowledge. Notice what that does. It positions you not just as a consumer of education, but as a contributor to human knowledge. Every assignment you submit, every citation you include, every source you acknowledge becomes part of that collective pursuit. This isn't philosophical window dressing. It's the organizing principle that makes all the other policies make sense. Take the Code of Academic Integrity itself. The policy states that every individual at UO People is responsible for following accepted standards and sharing a commitment to upholding these values. But here's what's interesting. The code doesn't just prohibit bad behavior, it actively encourages collaboration. Students are explicitly encouraged to work together, and the policy calls group efforts and study groups a wonderful tool to facilitate learning. The line gets drawn at submission. You must submit your own individual work unless instructed otherwise. Now, the policy requires that sources must be documented through acceptable scholarly references, and the extent of their use must be apparent to the reader. That phrase, the extent to which sources have been used must be apparent, is doing heavy lifting here. It means your citations aren't just about avoiding plagiarism, they're about showing your thinking process. The policy also establishes that the university may use third-party software to verify assignments are free of plagiarism. And there's a time restriction. Students cannot publicly share their UO People work until 2 calendar years after their final term. This connects directly to another major policy. Grade appeals. And this is where the system's internal logic becomes clear. The grade appeals policy states that the burden of proof in challenging a grade rests with the student. For a grade change to be recommended, you must make a compelling case that the grade originally given was unjustly or unfairly awarded. But here's the practical reality. That burden of proof concept means you need to build value into your work from the beginning. The appeals process has specific steps. First, you contact your course instructor within 14 days of the last day of term. The instructor has discretion to increase, decrease, or leave your grade unchanged. If that doesn't resolve it, you request a grade appeal form from your program advisor. That completed form must reach the Office of Academic Affairs within 30 days after the last day of term. Late appeals aren't accepted. The academic department reviews appeals and their decisions are final and binding. But notice what this process assumes. You can demonstrate with evidence that your work merited a different evaluation. That's only possible if your original submission was complete, properly cited, and clearly argued. This is where the policies interconnect. The academic integrity requirements aren't separate from grade considerations. They're the foundation that makes meaningful grade evaluation possible in the first place. The code establishes five categories of fraud and deception that compromise this foundation. But rather than just listing violations, the policy emphasizes positive obligations, learning about plagiarism, understanding citation forms, taking personal responsibility. Students who need assistance are directed to contact course instructors or review materials in the Learning Resource Center. There's also a reporting mechanism. All members of the academic community are expected to maintain integrity and report violations. If you suspect academic misconduct in a discussion forum or other work, you should contact your course instructor, not assign a grade as part of peer assessment. The disciplinary process is escalating but clear. First violation gets a warning and zero on the assignment. Second violation can mean a zero on the assignment or course failure. Third violation typically means course failure. All violations are cumulative throughout your entire time at UO People, regardless of which courses they occur in. And here's something important. All breaches are permanently noted in your academic record. The university reserves the right to revoke credits or degrees based on new revelations about academic issues, even after graduation. For severe violations, the university may suspend access to services like Moodle, even if that affects your ability to complete courses. You get 7 calendar days to submit a written response when facing severe violation allegations. If you don't respond, you forfeit the right to a Student Affairs Committee decision and may face course failure and university dismissal. But if you do respond, your case goes to the Student Affairs Committee for review. Possible sanctions include censure and warning, immediate removal from courses, suspension, or permanent dismissal. You can appeal decisions to the Appeals Committee, but they only review whether procedures were followed correctly, not the outcome itself. Appeals must go to your program advisor within 30 days of receiving the decision. Now, none of this is arbitrary bureaucracy. Each element supports the central mission, learning and knowledge pursuit. The integrity requirements ensure that knowledge building is honest. The grade appeals process ensures that evaluation is fair. The reporting mechanisms protect the community's commitment to these standards. And the escalating consequences reflect how seriously the institution takes its educational mission. What's practical about understanding this architecture is that it removes guesswork. You know what's expected, you know how violations are handled, and you know how to seek redress if you believe you've been treated unfairly. But more importantly, you understand that these aren't obstacles to your education. They're the framework that makes legitimate education possible. When everyone follows these standards, your degree means something. Your citations connect you to ongoing scholarly conversations. Your peer assessments become meaningful learning experiences rather than random grade assignments. And your own work contributes to that fundamental purpose, learning and the pursuit of knowledge. The question isn't whether you can get around these policies. The question is whether you want to participate in legitimate higher education. These policies define what that participation looks like. Now let's examine how academic integrity actually works in practice. The code defines plagiarism quite precisely, and there's one aspect that catches many students off guard. Plagiarism is the unintentional or intentional representation of the words or ideas of another as one's own work. Notice that word unintentional. Intent is irrelevant. Whether you meant to plagiarize or not makes no difference to the violation. This matters because students often think good intentions provide some protection. They don't. The policy identifies 5 categories of fraud and deception. Plagiarism sits first, but let's cover all 5. Second is fabrication. Falsifying documents, changing data, citing sources you never consulted, misrepresenting citations. Third, unauthorized assistance. Someone else completing your work, using copies from previous students, collaborating without acknowledging it. Fourth, misrepresentation. Lying about personal circumstances to get extensions, resets, or special treatment. Fifth, collusion. Helping another student commit academic dishonesty, including sharing your own work or requesting specific peer assessment scores. Each category has clear boundaries, but they share one feature. The harm occurs regardless of your motivation. The citation requirement drives most of these violations. Sources must be documented through acceptable scholarly references. More importantly, the extent to which sources have been used must be apparent to the reader. This means you can't just add a citation and hope it covers everything. The reader needs to understand exactly what came from where. Modern research tools make this both easier and more dangerous. Search engines, databases, even basic research assistance tools surface other people's work constantly. A student forum post put it well. Modern research tools almost always surface or restate other people's work, so failing to cite is no longer a marginal risk, but a default one. That's the new reality. Every search result, every summary tool, every piece of information you encounter likely belongs to someone else first. The disciplinary process follows a clear escalation. First violation gets you a warning from the instructor, a zero on the assignment from academic affairs, and a permanent note. Second violation typically means a zero on the assignment and possibly failing the entire course. Third violation results in failing the course. Fourth and subsequent violations are treated as severe. Severe violations trigger a different process. Academic affairs may suspend your access to university systems immediately. You get 7 days to submit a written response. If you don't respond, you forfeit your right to a committee review. If you do respond, your case goes to the Student Affairs Committee. They determine both violation and sanctions. Sanctions for severe violations include censure, removal from courses, suspension, or permanent dismissal. Appeals exist, but they focus on procedure, not outcomes. The Appeals Committee checks whether the original process followed university policies correctly. All violations accumulate throughout your studies, regardless of which courses they occur in. The record follows you. Here's something many students don't realize. If academic misconduct is discovered after graduation, the university can revoke credits or degrees. The permanent nature of the academic record means these consequences can surface years later, potentially affecting professional opportunities. Let's examine why intent doesn't matter through a concrete example. Suppose you find a perfect paragraph that explains your point. You copy it into your draft, planning to cite it later. You get busy, submit the assignment, and forget about the citation. Your intention was to cite properly. You simply forgot. Under the policy, this is still plagiarism. The policy positions this correctly. Turn the scenario around. If someone unknowingly reused your original research, would you consider that work still yours? Of course. The harm exists independently of intent. Your work was taken without attribution, regardless of whether the taking was deliberate. This connects to why the grade appeals process places the burden of proof on students. You can't unknow plagiarism once it's occurred. Students sometimes think they can research their way out of a plagiarism charge. Additional research typically confirms rather than refutes the scope of overlap. The evidence usually makes things worse, not better, unless the original assessment contained an honest error. This is why value must be built into the work up front through careful research and citation practices. The policy requires students to learn and be personally responsible for educating themselves about plagiarism and appropriate citation forms. That's not an abstract requirement. It means you need to understand these mechanics before you submit work, not after. Citation serves two functions. First, it gives proper credit to authors. Second, it allows readers to verify and extend your work. When citations are missing or inadequate, both functions fail. Credit goes unclaimed and verification becomes impossible. The university may use third-party software to verify assignments are free of plagiarism. These tools are quite sophisticated now. They don't just catch word-for-word copying, they identify paraphrasing, structural similarities, and even translations from other languages. Students are also expected to report violations they observe. If you see suspected academic misconduct in a discussion forum, you should contact your instructor. You should not assign grades to work you suspect violates academic integrity during peer assessment. Instead, contact the instructor. This creates a community responsibility that extends beyond individual compliance. All violations are reported by Academic Affairs to Student Services. They're permanently noted in your academic record. The record includes not just the violation, but the course, the assignment, and the sanction applied. Some violations are automatically classified as severe, particularly those involving the general code of conduct rather than just academic integrity. The university retains absolute discretion to determine appropriate sanctions based on severity and disciplinary history. Sanctions can be cumulative. You don't have to exhaust one level before another is imposed. Here's a practical reality check. Academic integrity violations rarely happen because students don't understand the rules. They happen because students understand the rules but choose convenience, pressure, or shortcuts over compliance. The student forum post I mentioned earlier demonstrates the mature approach. It recognizes that in an era when everything is recorded, undocumented reuse leaves a permanent trail. That trail can damage your reputation long after the assignment is graded. Professional fields increasingly conduct background checks that include academic records. A pattern of academic integrity violations can eliminate career opportunities. The policy also prohibits publicly sharing your UoPeople work for 2 calendar years after your final term. This prevents current students from accessing previous submissions. Sharing course materials or another student's work is also prohibited. These restrictions help maintain assignment integrity across terms. Let's address one common misconception. Some students think collaboration violations are less serious because they involve helping rather than cheating. Unauthorized assistance and collusion can result in the same sanctions as plagiarism or fabrication. The policy doesn't rank violations by perceived moral weight. The key distinction is acknowledgement. The policy explicitly encourages collaboration through study groups and group work. But students must submit their own individual work unless specifically instructed to participate in group assignments. When collaboration does occur, it must be acknowledged. The extent of collaboration must be apparent to the reader. This brings us back to transparency. Academic integrity isn't just about following rules, it's about making your intellectual process visible. Every source you consulted, every person you worked with, every tool you used should be documented appropriately. This creates a clean intellectual chain of custody from your initial research through your final submission. Students who need assistance with citation or collaboration questions should contact their course instructors or review materials in the Learning Resource Center. The university provides resources specifically because it expects students to use them rather than guess about proper procedures. One final point about the escalation system. Early violations are treated as learning opportunities with warnings and assignment penalties. Later violations are treated as character issues with course failures and potential dismissal. This progression reflects the university's expectation that students learn from early mistakes rather than repeat them. The permanent record ensures that learning happens. You can't start fresh in a new course and hope previous violations won't count. Understanding these mechanics isn't just about avoiding trouble. It's about building sustainable academic practices that serve you throughout your educational career. Students who master proper citation, transparent collaboration, and ethical research practices find that academic work becomes less stressful, not more. You spend less time worrying about whether you've crossed the line and more time focusing on the intellectual substance of your work. The policy framework supports learning by removing ambiguity about acceptable practices. Once you understand the boundaries, you can work confidently within them. So we've established how integrity violations work and their consequences, but let's shift to the tools that actually help you succeed. There are 3 practical frameworks every student needs to master: rubrics as strategic guides, advisement resources as policy navigators, and what the research calls metacognitive thinking. Let's start with rubrics because most students use them completely wrong. They read the rubric after they've finished their work, like checking a restaurant menu after they've already eaten. That's backwards. A rubric is a roadmap, not a report card. The transcript from the DBU video shows this clearly. Rubrics break assignments into specific criteria with defined performance levels and point allocations. Take the discussion board rubric example. It shows criteria like content, writing style, research, response quality, and timeliness. Each criterion gets a point range. Excellent is 17 to 20 points, good is 12 to 16, needs improvement is 8 to 11. But here's what matters. The descriptions tell you exactly what excellent looks like. For content to be excellent, you need to analyze issues with insight and clearly support your position. For good content, you analyze issues, but your support is weak. The practical difference is obvious. If you want excellent content, you don't just analyze. You analyze with insight and provide clear support. That's actionable intelligence, not guesswork. More complex assignments get more detailed rubrics. The research paper example breaks down into categories: research, organization, writing, appearance, overall impression. Each category has multiple sub-criteria. Under research, it evaluates sources, documentation, and citation quality. To get full marks, you actually need more sources than required, not just the minimum. The rubric tells you this directly. Some rubrics flip the layout: good performance on the left, poor on the right, instead of the typical left-to-right progression. Read carefully. Don't assume. The point allocation shows what the instructor values. If content gets 60% of the points and appearance gets 10%, spend your effort accordingly. The rubric is revealing the instructor's priorities. Now, there's a different rubric format some instructors use. Instead of performance grids, they list categories with point values and describe only the good performance level. This format says, here's what 20 points looks like in each category. If you hit this standard, you get the full points. If you partially hit it, you get partial credit. Either way, the strategic approach is identical. Read the rubric before you start, identify the highest value criteria, understand what excellent performance requires, then structure your work to hit those targets. This isn't gaming the system, it's understanding the assignment. The rubric represents the instructor's learning objectives translated into measurable outcomes. Moving to advisement resources, these aren't separate from policies, they're policy implementation tools. Your program advisor helps you navigate the academic requirements and understand how policies apply to your specific situation. The advisement office handles course selection, addresses academic concerns, guides you toward graduation, and helps when you need to understand policy implications for your circumstances. This connects directly to the policies we've discussed. If you're on academic probation and need to understand course load restrictions, your advisor explains how the policy applies. If you're considering a grade appeal, they help you understand the burden of proof requirements. The advisement resources aren't optional nice-to-have services. They're integral parts of the policy framework. They exist because policies need interpretation and application. Which brings us to metacognition, probably the most important concept in this entire discussion. The Baldwin research describes this as thinking about your thinking. Here's the key quote. You are the best judge of how well you know a topic or a skill, in college especially. Thinking about your thinking is crucial, so you know what you don't know and how to fix this problem. This is an abstract philosophy, it's practical strategy. If you can accurately assess your own understanding, you can target your study efforts where they're actually needed instead of wasting time on material you already know. The research identifies three metacognitive processes: planning, tracking, and assessing. Planning means asking what you're supposed to learn and how to approach it effectively. Tracking means monitoring your progress as you work through material. Are you understanding the important information? Should you slow down for difficult sections? What needs review? Assessing means evaluating how well you've learned the material and what adjustments you need to make. Can you explain the concepts clearly? Where are the gaps in your understanding? This connects directly to rubrics and policies. If you can accurately self-assess against a rubric before submitting your work, you can identify problems while you can still fix them. If you can honestly evaluate whether you understand the plagiarism policies and citation requirements, you can address uncertainties before they become violations. The Forum Post example shows this in practice. The student concludes with a self-evaluation. Q1, L3 or L4? Q4, hopefully L4. They're assessing their own work against the rubric criteria. This demonstrates metacognitive awareness. They understand the rubric well enough to evaluate their own performance and identify areas of uncertainty. But notice they're not entirely confident in their assessment. Hopefully, L4 suggests they recognize the limits of their self-evaluation, which is also metacognitively sophisticated. Let's make this practical. When you receive an assignment, first read the rubric completely and identify the criteria with the highest point values. Those are your primary targets. As you work, periodically assess your progress against those criteria. Are you meeting the requirements for excellent performance? Where are you falling short? Before submission, do a final self-evaluation using the rubric. If you can't honestly say you've met the excellent criteria, either revise your work or adjust your grade expectations. For policies, especially academic integrity, regularly assess your understanding and compliance. Can you explain the 5 categories of violations? Do you know when and how to cite sources? If you're uncertain about any aspect of academic integrity, use your advisement resources before submission, not after you've received a violation notice. The advisement office can clarify policy applications, help you understand citation requirements, and connect you with additional resources like the Learning Resource Center. This isn't about seeking easy answers or shortcuts. It's about building accurate self-assessment skills and knowing when you need additional support. Students who develop strong metacognitive awareness make fewer costly mistakes because they can identify and address problems before they escalate. They also get better grades because they can align their efforts with assessment criteria instead of hoping their instincts match the instructor's expectations. Remember, the goal isn't perfect initial performance, it's accurate self-assessment and strategic improvement. You want to know where you stand so you can get where you need to be. The Baldwin research emphasizes this. Metacognition isn't about being naturally gifted, it's about being deliberately thoughtful about your learning process. Students who think about their thinking perform better not because they're smarter, but because they're more strategic about addressing their actual learning needs. This preparation becomes especially important when we consider modern challenges like artificial intelligence tools and their impact on academic integrity. But those tools introduce specific risks that require targeted analysis. Now we get to the part that makes every integrity policy suddenly urgent. Artificial intelligence tools have fundamentally changed the risk profile of academic work, and university policies are scrambling to catch up. Here's what happened. AI tools like ChatGPT can produce polished academic text in seconds, but they come with two critical problems that most students don't fully understand. First, hallucination. Georgetown University's research shows that AI systems regularly produce what they call confident falsehoods. The system will generate citations that look perfectly legitimate, but reference papers that don't exist. It will state statistics with decimal precision that are completely fabricated. It presents this false information with the same confidence as verified facts, making detection nearly impossible without verification. Second, bias amplification. These systems are trained on internet content that reflects existing social biases, and they reproduce those biases in their output. Georgetown's documentation shows that AI can produce content that's sexist, racist, or otherwise offensive while appearing academically neutral. You're not just risking factual errors, you're potentially submitting biased analysis. But here's where it connects to everything we've covered about plagiarism. Remember that intent doesn't matter. AI tools don't create original content. They recombine existing material from their training data. When you use AI output without citation, you're representing someone else's work as your own, even if you don't know whose work it originally was. The Georgetown recommendations are practical and specific. First, meticulously fact-check all AI-generated information, including verifying every citation the AI provides. Don't ask AI tools to produce source lists, because they will fabricate references that look legitimate but don't exist. Critically evaluate all AI output for bias, especially when dealing with topics involving social groups, demographics, or controversial subjects. Remember that AI tools are not search engines. They generate responses designed to appear coherent, not responses based on verified information. For university policies, the citation requirements are clear but still evolving. If you use AI for topic development in early research stages, you might not need to cite it, but check with your instructor first. If you're providing commentary on AI-generated text, either paraphrasing or quoting it directly, citation is required every time. If you're planning to publish in journals, review their specific AI policies, because academic publishing has not settled on consistent standards. Most importantly, always verify and cite original sources rather than citing the AI tool that surfaced them. The practical risk mitigation comes down to three behaviors. First, use AI tools for brainstorming and early exploration, not for generating submittable content. Second, verify everything, every fact, every statistic, every citation. Treat AI output as a starting point for verification, not as verified information. Third, when in doubt, cite it. The cost of overattribution is minimal compared to the cost of unintentional plagiarism. What makes this particularly urgent is that AI detection tools are unreliable. Universities can't consistently identify AI-generated content, which means the burden falls entirely on you to use these tools ethically. This isn't about avoiding useful technology, it's about understanding that AI tools change the citation landscape in the same way that internet research changed it 20 years ago. The fundamental principle hasn't changed. You're responsible for understanding and documenting your sources. The tools just make that responsibility more complex. Students who master ethical AI use will have a significant advantage. They'll be able to leverage these tools for legitimate research and writing support while maintaining academic integrity. The students who ignore these requirements are building bad habits that will eventually surface in their permanent academic record, often when stakes are much higher than a single assignment. The key insight is that AI doesn't eliminate the need for original thinking and proper attribution. If anything, it makes those skills more valuable because they distinguish genuine scholarship from sophisticated text generation. We've now covered the complete academic integrity ecosystem. University policies provide the framework, integrity mechanics define the boundaries, practical tools help you succeed within those boundaries, and AI policies address contemporary challenges. None of these operate in isolation. Your citation practices affect your grades, which connect to academic standing policies, which determine your access to resources and opportunities. Understanding this system gives you the foundation to navigate higher education successfully while building habits that will serve you throughout your academic and professional career. Let's consolidate what we've covered today, because this isn't just about following rules, it's about building a sustainable approach to academic work. We started with the policy architecture, and the key insight there is that university policies aren't isolated requirements. They form an interconnected framework where the code of academic integrity supports learning, while the grade appeals process protects students through clear burden of proof standards. Then we examined the actual mechanics of academic integrity. The critical point is that plagiarism occurs regardless of intent. You can accidentally violate standards and still face consequences. The five categories of violations show how broad these standards are: plagiarism, fabrication, unauthorized assistance, misrepresentation, and collusion. Citation transparency isn't optional. It's how you demonstrate the ethical use of sources. Our practical tools section revealed that rubrics function as strategic roadmaps, not just grading sheets. Use them before you write to understand what evaluators actually prioritize. Metacognitive thinking, planning, tracking, and assessing your own work gives you the self-awareness to catch problems before they become policy violations. Finally, we addressed AI and modern challenges. The technology introduces new risks through hallucination and bias, but the solution isn't avoiding AI, it's using it ethically. Verify AI-generated information independently, evaluate for bias, and cite AI use appropriately. These practices align with existing integrity policies rather than replacing them. The larger pattern here is that academic success requires both understanding the rules and developing judgment about how to apply them. Whether you're interpreting a rubric, citing sources, or using AI tools, the underlying skill is making ethical decisions about knowledge work. These policies exist because they protect the legitimacy of education itself. When you follow them well, you're not just avoiding trouble, you're participating in a knowledge system that works. Your academic integrity practices today become your professional practices tomorrow. Build them carefully, because they're part of your intellectual toolkit for life. That concludes our examination of university policies and academic integrity. Remember to verify anything important from this AI-generated content, and good luck with your studies. Next time, we'll explore effective study strategies and time management for online learning environments.